The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, uupinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. With us this week is Blair Horner, the Executive Director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. He's back again. He hasn't been here for quite a while, which is a shame because we think so highly of him, and we think he has more insight into New York State politics than anyone we know. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, let's start with the Environmental Bond Act. The governor's proposed Environmental Bond Act, dubbed the Restore Mother Nature Bond Act. These guys are so clever. The governor's plan proposes that the state borrow $3 billion to address serious environmental problems tied to global warming. The governor's proposal would have to be first approved by the lawmakers this legislative session and then placed on the ballot for voter approval this November. Is this a good idea or a bad one, Blair?
Well, we think it's a good idea. I mean, there's, if anything, that's not enough money. When you start thinking about the impacts of climate change on New York State, we're already having it. I mean, the average temperature in the winter now has gone up a few degrees as compared to just a few decades ago.
I noticed that.
Yeah, I know. We don't see as much snow as we used to. And so, and when you think about it, rising sea levels, more intense storms, all of that stuff's tied to climate change, which is fueled by global warming. And so $3 billion probably won't even be enough, but it certainly is some real money. And so we think it's a good idea. I mean, the one thing where we would like to see the governor improve his proposal is, since it's about climate change, we think the oil companies should pay back the Bond Act instead of the members of the public. It's not our fault. I mean, we drive around in cars, but since the 1970s, the oil companies have known that what was happening in terms of burning of fossil fuels was going to lead to global warming, which is exactly what's happened. And instead of being honorable, good public stewards, they lied. So now here we are. We have a president of the United States who doesn't believe in science, and enough members of Congress that don't either. And so if you're going to do a Bond Act, which makes sense to us, you can make a bigger one, let's make the fossil fuel industry pick up the tab.
Now, Blair Horner, we know that this governor is behind the eight ball in terms of the budget being $6 billion or so.
That's right, in the hole.
In the hole. There are those people who suspect that the money from the, which is borrowing for the Environmental Bond Act, might be going to use legitimate, regular purposes of government, and that it won't be anything extra special.
Hold the front page, right?
In other words,
borrowed money for operations. Yeah, that does happen. But I think in this case, that's not going to be the issue as much because, again, the voters don't even get a chance to vote on it until November. In the fiscal year, so by the time the money starts to roll in and the borrowing happens and all that stuff on Wall Street, you're really talking about next fiscal year. So will they play games with the money? I mean, obviously, that's something people have to watch out for. You don't want what money that's being used to deal with the legitimate problem of global warming being used to fund, you know, baseball fields on Long Island somewhere. And so, you know, I think the way that the public will end up voting for this is if it's a transparent process, if there are ways to measure that the proposals are being doled out in a way that's not just political pork, like they put people in charge who know something about climate change to figure out how to spend the money, and, like I said before, that the oil companies pick up the tab instead of the taxpayer. I think that's a much easier sell to the public. I mean, the state has a lot of debt, and you're going to ask them, the voters, to add more to it. It's an easier way to make that argument if you're going to be doing it in sort of a transparent way, and that, in fact, the people picking up the tab are the people who made the problem in the first place.
Now, Blair Horner, you're a guy who really does know the governor pretty well. Actually, truth be told, you worked for him at one.
That's right.
You know, at one point.
Well, he was attorney general. He wasn't governor.
Attorney general. So what's he really up to? I mean, what place does this environmental bond issue play in his political agenda?
Well, you know, you talk to him more than I do,
who,
Alan.
Me?
So good question to ask him.
I mean, I will. All right,
fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, the Democratic Party's perspective, if Trump is at the top of the ticket, which it seems to be the case, one of the issues they're going to use against him and then all Republicans down the ballot is going to be the environment. And if the Bond Act is approved by lawmakers and it's on the ballot in November, I would think it would pull the green vote out to some extent if it's done properly. I mean, it's not true that all Republicans are anti-science, but the guy at the top of the ticket is, and that's what people think about. And so I think that's, you know, in a place like New York, where Republicans often are pro-science and often have good positions on the environment, they'll be running for office with a cinder block tied around their ankle. And if this thing's on the ballot, you know, that makes it that much harder. So there may be some political dynamic to this in terms of who shows up at the polls. But again, I think the state needs the money. You have a $6 billion budget deficit. If the economy tanks due to coronavirus or something else, they're going to need even more. So having this money available to deal with legitimate physical infrastructure problems that you have to deal with, pipes that break, subways that flood, rising sea levels that inundate people's homes, you're going to have to deal with all that stuff. It's nice to have that money there to do it.
Blair Horner, you mentioned a number of things here. And one of the things that I'm interested in is the coronavirus. Now, unlike all the other, shall we say, political palaver that we hear.
That's a scientific term.
This is a killer. This is a potential killer.
That's right.
And you got a governor and a president and all these other people. And what can they do except tell you to wash your hands
and don't touch your face
and bump elbows instead
right,
of shaking hands?
That's right.
Now, this is hardly the stuff that will give confidence to people.
No. And, you know, it's a legitimate issue. It's a legitimately big problem. I mean, a pandemic is nothing to mess around with. I mean, when you think about the city of New York, you have millions of tourists wandering around in there all the time. It's almost impossible to imagine that there's only 6 cases in the whole state. Now, there are different kinds of reactions to coronavirus. It's not something I've studied, but it appears that the vast, vast, vast majority of people have very mild symptoms and may not even know they're sick. So how this all plays out and the impact on individual people, of course, is different in the different circumstances. And it's scaring the hell out of everybody, that's for sure. And how well people perceive how the government is dealing with something that they really have very little control over. The president, President Trump, gets tagged if people perceive that the federal government was asleep at the switch on this, or that their response is inadequate, or he gets tagged because he's been so anti-science, a lot of people have left the government that normally would have been able to help.
And because he lies so much about everything that nobody believes a word he says when he says anything.
Well, then there's that, too.
Yeah, so...
I mean, the Washington Post does a better job than I do about keeping track of what he says that's right and wrong, but it makes it harder when for the general public, and the vast majority of the public are not partisans, if they don't really trust what the president has to say, and he says sometimes things where he's arguing this is like a political hit job, you know, somehow a disease that developed in China is somehow a political hit job.
Well, he said it.
I know. And so that undermines his credibility.
Here's the thing. I'm a political scientist. I've watched this kind of thing for years. But you have more instinct about this than I ever will. A lot of this stuff happens on your watch. Just because it happens on your watch, do you get blamed for
it? That's right. Ask Herbert Hoover.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you make decisions that can make it better or worse. So Hoover, for example, you know, is desperate to bail out the banks, but he can't get the legislation passed. And so he goes down the tubes in the depths of the Great Depression. Obama comes in, gets dealt a terrible hand, but people perceive that his, you know, marshaling the government to sort of react to it, you know, minimize the damage. And so you can get tagged sometimes fairly, sometimes unfairly for how you handle problems. We'll see what happens in terms of President Trump. I mean, if this thing turns out to be more like a seasonal issue and is gone in a few months, people may not remember much about it come November.
Nixon went to China. Don't you see? Sometimes it takes...
You can get coronavirus, though.
Yeah, but sometimes it takes a Republican to go against the usual thoughts about what Republicans do and who they are. Democrats, in this case, have an approach that may be different from the Republican way of doing things.
Yeah, I mean, Clinton, when Bill Clinton, when he first ran, he tried to be the anti-Democrat in 1992 as well. I mean, but Democrats are really the party of government. They believe that, you know, in a democracy, you need government, and government's supposed to deal with society's problems and to the best extent that it can. And Republicans make the argument that they don't believe that. And so in this case, there's no free market approach to dealing with the coronavirus. And so you have to have an able, competent, well-financed, resourced government to deal with the problem as best as it can. And I think this gives the Democrats a leg up, but we'll see how it plays out. I mean, again, if it's a relatively short-term thing, which is, I'm knocking on wood as we say this, and the impact on individual people is as minor as possible, I'm knocking on wood to hope that that's the case as well, then it may not have the same sort of political legs as if this thing is lingering on going into the fall, or it turns out to be a real disaster.
Well, you know so much about the way people play the game. The question I'm having is Andrew Cuomo, who is taking this deadly seriously,
yes,
he's giving press conference after press conference, going on the air, talking to people. Is that the way to play this?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, again, I'm not a politician, never run for office, but I think the public wants to be reassured that the people that they elect are taking these problems seriously and are doing something about it. It's hard to know what you do about coronavirus other than keep telling people don't touch your face and wash your hands. But that makes sense. And that was in many ways what helped former Mayor Giuliani after 9/11, where people viewed him as America's mayor. Prior to that, people hated him down in New York City. He would never, if he ran for a third term, if he was allowed, he never would have won because he was so unliked and so unpopular. But because of the way he handled 9/11, which, again, what do you do about that?
Sure.
Is the same sort of thing. People viewed it that he was transparent. He was on top of it. He sounded knowledgeable. And I think Governor Cuomo's attempting, and successfully, I think, portraying that he's the guy in charge and on top of this stuff. So he likes to be, I mean, he's really sort of fashioned himself as the guy in the windbreaker off to pull, you know, cars out of snowdrifts. It's a sort of same kind of thing. I think he wants people to see him as sort of an action governor who's there in a pinch. And I think that makes sense, and I think he's right that people do want to see that.
While we're talking, Blair Horner, about New York state politics, let's talk a little bit about Mike Bloomberg and his national efforts. He tried to run for president. We know, I don't know about you, but I know because I've been on the sidelines watching this for years, he's always wanted to be president.
Sure.
And I always say if Schmiff, but I know he was offered lots of times the possibility of running for governor, and he didn't want to do it. I suspect he thought it was not the path to the presidency. Well, in any case, he's out.
Yes.
He got what they used to call, my father used to call in gin rummy, schmutted.
$500 million and he carries American Samoa.
Yeah. But that $500,000 is to you and me.
Half a billion.
Right. Half a billion is to you and me, maybe $5 extra.
That's right,
if you give an extra little tips to somebody. So what does this say? I've always wondered about New York. There's something about New York that people in the rest of the country are deeply suspicious about. There was this whole thing of Mario running for president. He had a little bit of a Queens accent. The same thing with his son, who, if you believe the sun rises in the morning, wants to be president of the United States, but who held off saying he had an agreement with Joe. He told me he had an agreement with Joe Biden that one of them would go, and that it would be Joe Biden. In any case, what is it about this New York thing for the rest of the country?
Well, I mean, just, again, let's be fair. I mean, there is a guy who's president right now who is from the city of New York with a Queens accent.
We don't want him.
And amazingly enough, was able to get elected getting 3 million fewer votes than his opponent. I don't think Bloomberg's problem was that he was from New York, or really from Boston via New York.
Yeah.
I think his path to victory was only if Biden imploded. And Biden didn't.
And he expected, because of the early returns and the early polls, that Biden was imploding.
That's right. And he might have been right. I mean, you know, you never, that's the cool thing about politics. You never know what's really going to happen. I mean, Biden's resurrection in South Carolina last weekend may turn out to be some historical moment in which, you know, the whole table turns for him. But I think if it'd be interesting if Bloomberg had decided to run in South Carolina, what might have happened?
Was,
you know,
my next question. My next question. If Schmiff, but if he had gotten in earlier, you know, then he might have had a better shot.
Who knows? I mean,
we'll never know.
His argument. You know, the Americans are very interesting when they elect a president. It's often like as different as the predecessor as you can have. And I think we'd all agree that Donald Trump is as different from Barack Obama as you could have. And so I think Bloomberg's argument that the sort of boring, technocratic, successful, both in politics and in personal life, individual would have been something that the country would have been interested in as a sort of a stabilizing force after the circus was in town in Washington. Now, we'll never know if that will turn out, but the only path was a no-Biden path, and I think Biden picking up steam was what... I mean, when you looked at the polling, it looked pretty clear that where the votes came from was really out of Bloomberg's numbers.
Oh, sure. And Bloomberg has already endorsed Biden.
Yeah, yeah. And so it'll be, you know, the interesting thing will be to see how it all plays out. You know, if Biden gets elected, does he do the team arrivals approach to the cabinet like Abe Lincoln did? But that's sort of gaming it out a little far ahead.
We did interview Doris Kearns Goodwin on that very question years ago about the cabinet. Good idea. Talk to me about ethics reform in New York.
Well, there isn't any. That's the problem, right? It's
Is
a short
really
conversation.
True? We have no ethical standards in New York.
Well, we have politically created ethics watchdogs. And so since they're politically created and beholden to those who appoint them, by definition, they can't do a good job because they're supposed to be watching the people that appointed them. And there's no political insulation, and there's been reports in a recent Albany Times Union of, again, not verified, but that the governor intervened on a discussion on an issue, on a vote, dealing with something he cared about. And that's not supposed to happen. And so, you know, one of the amazing things is, you know, you have top aides to the governor facing prison or in prison. You have the former Senate Majority Leader in the pokey now. You have the former Speaker of the Assembly looking at pokey time. And nothing significant happened. It's sort of amazing. No hearings were held. People weren't protesting.
What is that? Is it the fact, I'm sorry for interrupting, but is that the fact that legislators say, you know, if we do this, this is going to come back and potentially hurt us?
Now, they're all more worried about the law of unintended consequences than they are about putting up with the inadequate status quo. And so they're just not putting any more oxygen in the room and hoping that the fire goes out and that, you know, nobody else gets snagged anytime soon. And with Preparara gone, they might be right.
Buddy Hackett once said best when he said he went into the army, and instead of having two Kreplach every day from his mother, which gave him heartburn, he didn't have it anymore in the army because they didn't give him Kreplach, and he said the fire went out. When you said the fire went out. I like to think about that. Okay.
And how often does Buddy Hackett get brought up in these conversations?
Well,
I mean, really.
It's not a good signal about the state of my brain. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the so-called bail reform. The governor now says he wants to tamper with letting people out without bail and not giving the judges enough power to say, no, you stay in because you're a danger. What do you make of that?
Well, it's not one of the issues I work on, so I don't really feel like I have a lot of expertise, but it looks like the governor...
Oh, you know about everything.
The governor says he wants to have something happen in the budget, therefore I think something will happen in the budget. The Assembly does not want to see anything happen
How
in
come?
The budget. How come? I
How
think
come?
That,
Speaker Hastie is really against...
No, I mean, it's possible it won't, but I think that if the governor wants it bad enough, it's really hard for the legislature to say no. Mm-hmm. Just the way the power structure is set up in Albany, the governor in the budget process holds a lot more cards than the legislature does. They're really junior partners.
And he has to thank George Pataki for that because he brought it to the court, and the
That's
court
right.
upheld his ability to
That's right.
and, put things in the budget and pass them.
And Patterson weaponized it.
Yeah.
And so it is, you know, it's one of those things where we will see how it plays out. But the Senate Majority Leader would like to see something happen. The governor would like to see something happen. The speaker does not want anything to happen, and he makes reasonable argument that the law's only been in effect for a couple of months. How can you figure it out? That being said, I think public opinion now has sort of swung the other way on that issue. And
people don't like this bail reform bill because they think it puts them in danger.
Well, I mean, you and I have talked about this. The stories that led to the change were about people who were in jail for a long time because they were poor and they couldn't make bail. The stories, and predictably, are now they're anecdotal stories about people who are allegedly dangerous that are allowed to leave and are not being put behind bars because of the no bail rule. So you knew that that was going to happen because nothing's perfect. So, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure. It's an election year. particularly
the Senate has been newly won by the Democrats,
that's right,
and they don't want to give it up. And some of those guys who won on Long Island and other places, which had been gerrymandered for the Republicans, let's face it, the Democrats took it anyway. They're scared to death that they're going to lose.
Yes, six Senate Democrats on Long Island. You have a number of Senate Democrats in the Hudson Valley, and the suburban Democrats are really feeling the pressure. Now, let's just put all the politics aside for the moment. The substance of it, again, I'm not an expert in it, but that seems to be where you could see where this could land, is that you end up giving the judges some discretion under certain circumstances.
Interesting.
Where someone has a rap sheet that you keep them in, and in other circumstances you don't.
Interesting, Blair. One of the things we political scientists and political observers like yourself and others have always been interested in is the gerrymander. Now, we know that the Republicans gerrymandered the New York State Senate so that they couldn't lose, or they thought they couldn't, and then they did. And so when will the Democrats have a chance at their own version of the gerrymander?
What's coming up? We're doing the census, you know, starting later this month, about a week or so, the census information goes out. The count starts. The census information, for your listeners, just to remind them on their basic American history, has been going on since 1790. And the reason for the original census in 1790 was to figure out where everybody lives so they could draw up legislative districts. So we're doing the census now, and that will lead to new lines for the 2022 elections.
Why couldn't they just do it now like they did it in Texas? In other words, as soon as they got the Senate, they had the Senate.
Well, they got to get the census information, right? So that's what. I see what you're saying. Yes, yeah. They could try. Under the state constitution, there was a change made in 2014 that was advanced by the governor, which basically creates a commission, not independent, of course, directly accountable to the legislature, to draw the lines, and it gives equal votes to the Senate Republicans as it gives to the Senate Democrats. And so the ability to ram through whatever it is they want is more difficult as a result. The new constitutional amendment says there's this commission that will draw the lines, the legislature approves or disapproves. If they disapprove, they draw the lines again. If they disapprove, then the legislature draws the lines, in all cases subject to veto by the governor. And so it's a more complicated process than we've ever had before, although the outcome may be exactly the same, which is legislative majorities jam things through. And to push things through under the new system, if both houses are controlled by one party, you need two-thirds majorities. I believe it's two-thirds, might be three-fifths majorities in both houses to push through plans. Now, the Democrats in the Senate are pretty close to two-thirds. They just need two more seats. The Assembly, of course, already has a two-thirds majority. Sure. So we'll see what happens. But I think they will wait. I think that people are going to see what happens in November. And depending on how strong the hand is that they're dealt, either to the Senate Republicans or the Senate Democrats, will drive what the lines look like next year. But you're absolutely right. Last time around with the most gerrymandered legislative lines I have ever seen, and I've worked on this for 40 years, is completely rigged. The Senate Republicans, though, were dealing with the problem of the rapidly inflating balloon of Democrats
there
at some point
bodies.
Had to pop, and
there
it popped.
There weren't enough bodies to move around.
That's right.
Oh, they great ran. Computer. Draw me a district where we can't lose.
Yeah,
sorry, sir. Can't do it.
That's
don't
exactly
have enough
right.
bodies.
That's
okay.
Exactly right.
Let's go to, we only have 4 minutes. My producer, David Gustina, is a very nasty fellow, and he will not allow me any more time than 4 more minutes. So here
right,
are the two
I'll
things.
I'll keep it down.
All right. Legalizing marijuana. Governor, again, wants to put that in the budget, too. Does he really want it?
Well, I think they all want the money. I mean, for those of the folks in the Capital District in New York, everyone knows how easy it is to get it if they want to. Right? They just drive across into Massachusetts and off they go.
Right near my house,
right?
Walking distance.
I'm not surprised that it's near your house. And how did you know it was in walking distance?
I know, because I walk there all the time. I see those huge lines outside with New York State vehicles outside.
And so I think people view it as in the same way that it took a while for New York to expand its casinos, which hasn't really worked out in the way that people said it would. I think it's the same way, as that they see other states moving. New York wants to move to be in sync. It raises all sorts of interesting public health questions that are, I don't know if they're adequately yet addressed. One being, you know, flavored marijuana. We're talking about the battle over flavored vapes right now. What do you do about flavored marijuana, for example,
right,
particularly the edibles? And so those issues, I haven't heard a lot of discussion on that, but it's certainly an issue that will have to play out if the governor wants to do that. Again, if it's revenues and people want to buy it and you get revenues off of it, it's not going to really help so much this fiscal year, but it will certainly help down the road. And if the economy is in bad shape, the state's going to need all the revenues it can get.
Blair Horner, I'm going to give you 50 seconds on each, and I mean 50 seconds on each of these. PFAS chemicals are fouling our water. Are we moving aggressively enough?
No. We could move aggressively more. And hopefully there'll be money in the budget to deal with improved water infrastructure, because at a certain level, you got to drink the water and you got to have it filtered. You got to have clean water.
Ding. That's 50 seconds. Early voting. Right. We got early voting in New York State. What about ranked voting so that you get a second choice?
New York City has it, ranked choice voting. So you get a chance to sort of pick the ones. I mean, New York City, they have runoff elections, and so it makes it easier to actually—
Term limits.
They have term limits, too. But ranked choice voting makes it easier to deal with runoff elections, because you can you don't have to keep running elections. It's a way to sort of deal with that. So, yeah, the second choice could end up being the mayor of the city of New York.
Medicaid. The governor, his approach to the $6 billion he's short in the budget is to tell the counties, you got to fork up more money.
Yeah.
And they are furious, but they're a little afraid of this governor for good reason.
Yeah, well, you know, anytime they're not like, you know, living it up in luxury. So they're worried about the cost. The governor put together a Medicaid design team. There's no consumer public representation on it. It's really just the people in the industry figuring it out. We'll see what they come up with. They're supposed to come up with $2.5 billion in savings, and it's 3 weeks before the end of the budget. We'll see how that goes.
I was talking to one legislator who said, when I said a $6 billion, you know, budget, and she said, really? In other words, I think they suspect there's some phoniness about that $6 billion.
And it's an election year, and so people are not going to want to do cuts in programs in election years. The easiest way to do that is sort of, you know, adjust your expectations in a way that gets you out the door. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, they're saying $6 billion. What are we going to do? That's what we got to go with.
Okay, last 50 seconds. NYPIRG has a lot of students in it.
Yep.
You're looking for some help from the governor, more for the state university and city university. But that ain't going to happen, is it?
Well, I mean, you know, the governor is automatically raising tuition every year now for 10 years and then not increasing the TAP coverage to deal with it.
For poorer kids.
Yeah, means that the colleges have to make up the difference. Mm-hmm. And every year that hole gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's creating financial chaos at the public colleges. The state should just fix the TAP program, increase the maximum award to match tuition that would take care of the poorest kids in public colleges and help the independent colleges at the same time.
So, unfortunately, we are out of time. Our guest has been Blair Horner, the executive director of NYPIRG. Blair, thanks so much for joining us. It's always fun. You are the best.
Thanks for having me.